Meet Natural Cycles, the only FDA-cleared and CE-marked birth control app that's built around your body. The Natural Cycles app pinpoints your fertile days by tracking shifts in your temperature, so you can plan or prevent pregnancy naturally. It's easy to use. Simply take your temperature in the morning with our free Bluetooth thermometer included with our annual plan, or sync with your Oura Ring or Apple Watch. The app analyzes your data and tells you daily whether it's a fertile or non-fertile day. Natural Cycles is 93% effective with typical use and 98% effective with perfect use. But beyond effective birth control, the app helps you understand your body and cycle better than ever. And unlike some period tracking apps, Natural Cycles provides an advanced data protection program to keep your information private and secure. Ready to go hormone-free? Sign up for the Natural Cycles annual plan and get a free Bluetooth thermometer, plus 15% off your subscription with the code RADIO15 at naturalcycles.com.
DC politicians want to enact harmful credit card mandates that could take away your cash back and rewards points, perks that stretch your budget and make life a little easier. Losing these benefits means less money for your family's everyday essentials like gas and groceries. The perks you rely on could disappear, leaving you with higher costs and fewer options. Tell Congress to guard your card and oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card mandates.
Paid for by Electronic Payments Coalition.
Koya Bakari is a national pageant title holder. In fact, Ms. Elite United States 2024. She's a speaker and mindfulness coach who brings deep authenticity and wisdom to conversations on healing and self-worth. Having risen from trauma, including suicide attempts, bulimia, and sadly sexual assault, Koya's story embodies resilience and purpose. Her presence invites listeners into a space of truth and vulnerability, grounded in ancestral rhythm and African spirituality. Koya blends personal experience with spiritual insight to speak on topics like emotional healing, self-love, and living aligned with one's purpose. She holds space for listeners to reconnect with their heart space and embrace their own power. Koya's voice carries a vibration of hope and the pulse of transformation, making her a compelling and inspiring guest for this podcast. And I'm so glad she's agreed to join us. Wow, there's a lot I want to ask you, so I'm gonna dive straight in if that's okay. The first thing I think I have to do is just to take you back a little bit, just to understand what your teenage years, your formative years, what they were like, and whether your 14, 15-year-old self would recognize who you are today.
First, thank you, Andrew, for having this dedicated space. And let me preface everything by saying I'm a crier. And so I feel the tears coming. Because as you read that, my younger self just stood up. And I just celebrate her. So I'm probably cry. It's just what I do. But my 14, 15-year-old self, no, she would not. She would identify as what she aspires to be or to do, and not even, see, I feel the tears coming, not even with about the industry, pageantry or Molly industry, but to be able to have a voice, to be able to articulate her emotional and mental capacity, to be able to stand tall. I have an affinity with sports and competition. And one thing that I seek to do, I've always loved water and I've always been a swimmer. And one thing I seek to do is to do a mini triathlon. And as a 15, 16-year-old, I wanted to do that, but I was too afraid. I was too afraid of water because at that time I was having these ideations of suicide. And so even though I tried a different way, I was afraid to go to the water. So she wouldn't recognize it, but she would say, oh, but we made it, because those things that we aspire to do, we now can. So yeah, but I salute her. I honor her. I speak to her daily. And tell her we made it through. We made it.
But just before we hit record, you talked a little bit about how strong your relationship with your mom was. And I wondered, was that the same throughout your whole childhood? Was your mom always there for you? Was she always a person you looked up to and sort of aspired to be?
Oh my goodness. Yeah. I have the fortune, the blessed, the honor to actually look like my mother. My mother literally just spit me out. I am a doppelganger. My mother, oh my gosh, I thought she was the most beautiful woman in the world. And I'm not hubris, but it's just she had this, I'm sorry, should have cut my photo. My mother definitely always supported me. I remember when I ran into just challenges, you know, you dating and having these heartaches. My mom was the first person I wanted to call because I didn't know mommy, what are these emotions? My mother would sit my sister and I down and, you know, now we talk about mindfulness and things of that nature, but she was doing those things, mirror work with us when we were younger. She saw in me things that I didn't see until probably my 20s. She just spoke words of affirmation and told me that I could. And despite the noise that I heard, and it was a lot going on with me mentally, just with dealing with low self-esteem, low vibration. But she just loved me. I didn't know. I had no idea. She was just this wonderful human being. I miss her immensely. She was so wonderful, so selfless. When she was transitioning during COVID, but it wasn't from COVID, she had what's called myoniosarcoma, which is cancer of the muscles. But my mother said to my sister and I, because we were working on a book, and it's in the name of the book, super long title, What Our Mother Told Us, What We Forget, But We Forgot to Remember. And she said, you're going to finish the book. And she said, and Koya, these are the things I need you to know. And she just laid out the rest of my life. And she knew. We knew that she had maybe about a week left. And she used her last breaths to give me directives. I just thought, oh my goodness. The very last words my mother said to me in her love for me was, do not allow the mission of any organization to interfere with the purpose for your life. And I said, Mother, what do you mean? And she said, you're out here, you're doing pageantry, you're out here doing speaking engagements, but don't forget about what it is that God wants you to do. And I said, well, Mommy, I'm doing what God wants you to do. She said, you are, but there's another piece that you're forgetting. And so she was speaking about just going a little bit deeper. Yeah. She was speaking about, yes, you're competing and you're doing shows, but don't forget your why. And that was always her focus. Amazing. She loves me now. I literally, it may sound macabre, I literally sometimes ride around it with her, in her ashes in the car. I'm like, come on, girl. But it's just, it gives me a sense. I'm saying more tongue in cheek. I haven't done that in a long time, so I don't want to think I'm off. But yeah, she had an unyielding depth of love for my sister and I. And it is my hope that I'm able to offer that same level of love to others as well. Amazing woman. Amazing.
She sounds amazing. And I think you said before, we almost only realize how amazing our mothers are, our parents are, when we look at our friends that we make, our colleagues that we make, maybe, you know, our partners that we meet, and you think, gosh, doesn't everybody have this amazing relationship? It's what? Yeah. You don't talk to your mom. You don't see your dad. You don't.
Yeah.
It's funny. So I don't know how old it is when we realize that not every relationship is like our own.
I hit the jackpot. Yeah. I hit the jackpot, and I'm grateful because I needed my mother, and she just. Sometimes I don't always have the words to align with the emotion. This is one of those times. It was so much deeper than love. It was so much deeper than care. My mother loved me before she even saw my face. And I always knew that. And she's just ensured my sister and I will always care for her. And we had the best of time. We didn't always have the most money. I thought we were rich. You could not tell. And my mother said, girls, rich and poor are a mindset. And she just made sure that we were empowered with the richness of love.
DC politicians want to enact harmful credit card mandates that could take away your cash back and rewards points. Perks that stretch your budget and make life a little easier. Losing these benefits means less money for your family's everyday essentials like gas and groceries. The perks you rely on could disappear, leaving you with higher costs and fewer options. Tell Congress to guard your card and oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card mandates.
Paid for by Electronic Payments Coalition.
I had the best. childhood outside of the trauma, but my mother, the best going. Yes.
What was it that made you think about going into pageants and modeling? Obviously, apart from the fact you're incredibly beautiful, what was it that made you? Because particularly after suffering some, what's the right phrase, negative events in your life, what was it that made you feel you could put yourself out there, be up on stage, be looked at, be viewed, be seen? What was it that pulled you towards that world?
Well, because after I graduated undergrad, my mother and I, we were looking for money for grad school. And I saw a commercial on TV and it was promoting modeling opportunities. To give some context, for years I asked my mother, could I model? Because I was always, I'm a nerd in heels. I love information. And so I knew my trajectory, or I had planned out, because I had two different paths. But in my mind, if I made it, and that's definitely how I thought through, if I made it someplace through life, at least got to my 18, 19, I said, I plan to go to college. And I knew that was the pathway for my parents wanted me to do. And I love information. But by the time we got to graduation, I was like, oh, crap, what does that look like for funding? And so I saw this commercial. It talked about modeling opportunities. And I asked my mom. Years before, I had asked my mom, hey, mom, you know, would love to model. What are your thoughts? And she said, daughter, not yet. Now, what it was, she understood my esteem. And it's quite a competitive. And so I was like, okay, yes, ma'am. I'll come back another year. Mom, would love the model. Not yet, daughter. And what she would do, she would continue to do just to affirm me. She would take me on these long drives and just have me look at the sky, just talk to me about just the beauty of the sky. And I have that same beauty. She's just amazing. So fast forward, I've graduated from undergrad. I see this commercial on TV. It's a modeling opportunity. So yet again, I say, hey, mom, would love to model. What do you think? And this time she said, yes. And she said, tell me more about it. And so the world looks different now. We didn't have the same access with internet, all different things. So I was calling around. I had to wait for the commercial again to get the phone number. And what it wound up being was MS America pageant system that was offering modeling opportunities for contestants. And so we had never thought about, and I say we because my mother was my first manager, had never thought about pageantry. So I said, hey, mom, what do you think? And she said, you're ready. And so we were driving back. So in contrast to DC, Baltimore is maybe about 30, 40 minutes. So we would drive back and forth. We went to these meetings. And lo and behold, out of 60 girls, I placed top 10, no training, very little makeup. We didn't hit top three, but one of the directors said, hey, you have something. And my mother said, darn it, Andrew. I'm trying to remember. My mother said she always has. Oh, goodness. It's early, so I didn't put on a lot of makeup, so we kind of good. but from there, we started competing and we didn't always win, but we started winning at certain points. So I was able to secure some local titles and a couple of national titles. And that helped us pay for grad school. Lo and behold, who knew? But it was my mom. Grad school, the necessity of financial support, and my mother just believing in me. And my sister then, who was a hairstylist, we just brought in the whole community. And it became this place where I found that I could excel, and not from the lens of, oh, I'm winning. It was, I found my voice. a competitor. And when I realized I was actually competing against myself, I was forcing myself to go in front of people to say, see me, when for years I wanted just to hide and hibernate. And it just started to blossom. We started speaking about platforms, and my mother said, I was like, Mom, what will my platform be? She said, it's who you are and what you do. And initially it was about self-love and self-awareness and just being able to stand in front of people. But when I became comfortable with my story and I was able to start to heal, I was in active therapy because of my mother. My therapist said, hey, you do this. Have you thought about sharing? And it took me a while. But that has enabled me to also heal and to be a part of a conversation that is that is not easy to hear or sometimes to receive, but it's a truth of many people. So that's been my pageantry journey, and it's been absolutely fantastic. It has, the universe has been very gentle with me. And I give such an abundance of thanks and graciousness. Because again, I just wanted to pay for grad school, Andrew. I just wanted my MBA. and it's my hope that along the way that we've been able to, you know, help others to say, hey, you are important too.
So when you won Ms. Elite United States, mm-hmm. did that feel that, wow, we've done it, we've made it, this is it, this is the pinnacle, this is it. How did it feel?
So I had a couple of feelings. The first thing was, just like you said, oh my gosh. And so what they say in pageantry, so if you ever know, so it's called, in modeling, it's called the money shot when you're at the front mm-hmm. of the stage. In pageantry, when you're crowned, they want you to be excited, but it's also your shots. And it's like, hold your tears in. Hold your tears in because yeah. it's your pictures. And so that's the first thing I thought, hold my tears in. But as I held my tears in, it just came. At least I attempted to, because my mother mm-hmm. wasn't there. And though I had the opportunity to secure a couple of other national titles, this one was different. At this point, I had been in therapy for years. I had really evolved the platform, and I had stepped.
Corporate megastores are spending millions lobbying DC politicians on one-sided policies that send small businesses tumbling. They want to enact harmful credit card mandates that take resources away from your local credit union and community bank, leaving Main Street businesses with less access to credit, making it harder for your family to pay for everyday goods like gas and groceries. Tell Congress to guard your card and oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card mandates.
Paid for by Electronic Payments Coalition.
Out of pageantry for a little while, just to take a break. And I came back in after my mother passed, because as she was transitioning, that was one of the things we did. And in my mind, I knew, though I didn't think she was saying necessarily pageantry, but part of my voice, for some reason, we had found success in this piece. And there was no way I wasn't going to come back here, because it was part of something that we did together. And I was like, oh, go on, Mom. We actually did it. And you done got grown and left me. But it felt so warming. It felt validated, and not about the competition part. It was that we've done the work. If I can digress slightly, my pageant coach, I knew when I came back that I needed a coach. The industry had changed tremendously, and so I needed to relearn just certain things and to elevate my awareness on certain topics. And my pageant coach said to me that she would not coach me unless I went back into active therapy. I thought that was the most craziest thing ever. But it helped save me. I've been in therapy and have been, but when I was speaking with my pageant coach about my platform and things of that nature, I wasn't going to therapy as much as I used to. I was okay. I was fine. So I was maybe going twice a month, which was fine. But she said, hey, we actually have a chance of winning. And she said, and even if we don't, I'm so sorry. She said, even if we don't, your platform, I would still have the state title. And your platform is speaking about coming out of resilience. I'm sorry. That's menopause. Your platform is speaking about coming out of trauma. And when she asked me, she said, how's little Colia? I hadn't had anyone ask me that in a very long time. And I said, she's fine. She said, where is she? And I said, what do you mean? She said, where is she? And I said, well, she's still in the place where she was assaulted. And she forced me to go back to a space that was very uncomfortable. I thought I was fine. And she said, until you bring her out of the basement was one of the places where I was assaulted. She said, until you bring her out of that basement, I will not coach you. And so that pushed me back into therapy because one, though it was very uncomfortable for me to hear, I'm thinking, wait a minute, we're talking about pageant coaching, not about my trauma, but it was also interconnected. And so it became this trifecta team, my coach, my pageant coach, my therapist, and myself. And it took me some months to physically, even though to envision myself bringing her out of that basement, because I first had to now go back into it, which was because I had closed the door and I thought I was fine with that. But So all of it interconnected. So by time, so when we won, it was a victory on so many levels, just outside of the crowd. It was little Colia. I saw her like, we did it. You're out that basement, mommy. That all those words and time and love that you poured in me is standing here. And I was able to receive it too. It's like, oh, I've done the work and purposely done the work, and I can celebrate this victory, not just for myself, but for others to say, hey, we're on the other side. I'm sorry I was so long-winded, but...
No, it's... It's just... It almost makes me feel that somehow your mom guided you to the right coach at the right time. And that the coach knew what you wanted. And I think that's... I know you said your mom wasn't there with you when you won, but yeah, we both know she was there with you, completely standing by the side of you all the time. I think that's...
Yeah, I believe
that. I think her power, her luminosity, so yeah, just measure you in the right person. Because other coaches would have been like, right, let's start learning the pageantry again. Let's learn the... I don't know, I have no idea. Let's learn how you present yourself. Let's learn the... Yeah. Let's learn the walking or talking, all the sort of... I guess the logistics and the technical side of things.
Yeah.
Your coach obviously recognized that there was something that you needed to go back to be able to go forward again. So how old were you when you suffered the trauma?
4, 10, 11, and 12. Yeah. And so you don't always know, let me say for me, I didn't always know the words to articulate what was happening. And I've been asked, why didn't you call you? Why didn't you say something when it happened? I never felt safe in my own skin, not because of my parents. It was just, I never felt normal. I always felt I was different. I looked different. I was taunted. I was bullied. So I never felt safe outside of my mother and my dad and my grandmother's and my godmother's embrace. So I didn't know how to say to my mother or my dad these things. At first, I didn't even know what was happening.
No.
I didn't even know I didn't have the words. And then as I got older, trauma is traumatizing. And I didn't know how to articulate that. But one thing I did know as I started therapy, what my younger mind did process, because my mother loved us so intensely. I was afraid of losing my mother because I knew my mother would make sure that whoever harmed me, she would make sure that I was protected. And I was so afraid that my mom would be gone. And so for years, I never said anything. And that led into bulimia, and that led into not wanting to be here and things like that. But there's a tenderness, a great tenderness that's taken from you that can never be replaced. I was thinking about my younger self and talking to her this morning, and because I still can see, I still can smell, and it's it's a lot to process, but I was saying, and what I say to myself daily, we're on the other side. So in when occurred in my youthfulness, my whole world just fell apart. And I just felt even more alone, because I felt dirty. I felt broken. And I didn't know what to do. I had no idea what to do. I do know that I joke and say I'm a nerd, but words and books helped me a lot. I would literally hook school when I was in high school to go to the library and just stay there for days. I mean, not days, sorry, for hours, you know, just hours. I was a cheerleader, so I had to make sure I got back enough for cheerleading practice. But words, information, I was able to compartmentalize very well and still can now. And so I was able to push those things as best as I could to the back of the caverns of my mind, and to create these other wonderful stories of hope and this zest for life that the protagonists were having in these stories. And that saved me for a while until it just, to everything just overpoured, and I just no longer had a desire to be in this transition. But I'm grateful I got it wrong. I'm grateful that I messed up, because and what I mean by that when I attempted twice that it didn't go through, I wasn't successful. I'm grateful because I have a zestful life now where I can celebrate the sun and the moon and not afraid of closing my eyes and not afraid of people, not afraid to hug you thinking you may harm me. So yeah, I was a young lady.
And after those events, what were your early romantic relationships like? Sadly enough, I've talked to lots of women that have experienced sexual assault of one kind or another, an extraordinary amount of women, and I always wonder, because obviously as a man, I'm sort of physically quite strong and able to look after myself, whatever. And I always feel for a woman, no matter how strong and powerful they may be, there's that vulnerability when they are in a romantic situation with somebody. How did your early romantic relationships feel? Were you able to trust people in that way?
No. I've dated very few in my life. And it was challenging, because when when you start to enter into a more intimate space, that I never wanted to be a poster child. I didn't want to be a poster child of assault.
Yeah, yeah.
But I also had enough of my voice at the time to say, hey, I'm not comfortable, and I'm grateful that the different guys that I dated were very honorable. But it was difficult. And so, because I was embarrassed, because now all these different questions would happen. And I didn't want to enter into that, because each time I was rehashing it. So I dated very few. I probably on one hand, I can count. I like to say that the universe has been kind to me, because I've heard other stories where some women have felt just the trauma just surmounted even the more because their partners wouldn't listen and things like that. But it was very difficult. I have triggers, even though I'm in therapy. I may be in therapy for the rest of my life. And not that therapy is always there. Sometimes we just, I use therapy as a check-in. It's a check-in, like, hey. And so, but I do have triggers sometimes where, and that has been very difficult, where I may not, especially in my younger years, I couldn't be touched intimately. And that, and I had to learn this as best as I could, the psychology of the mind of a man, because it can be confusing where I may have been able to be in an intimate setting yesterday, right? But today, just hours later, I'm triggered and I'm fighting, and it would get really rough because sometimes I will wake up and I'm screaming. And so that happened with someone who I loved so tenderly. But I just felt I can't continue to do this. And he understood. I was the one. He was like, no, we'll work through it. But I said, I need help. I still needed help. So romantic relationships, I have been able to enter into them. I was able to. But being very selective, and there have been very few. Because it's something hard to talk about. I like to say, I like sports and highly competitive. And so a few of the guys I dated, we started definitely really as friends because I can talk sports all day. And then I like to say, oh, you realize I'm a woman. At some point. And so I then say, welcome to behind the curtain. And because I'm a fake comedian, I'm a jokester, I'm highly competitive. I like to have my basketball, my football, all that in the back of my car. But to now meet this other side of my person. And they may even know, they'll know that I'm model and do different things, but that part doesn't always show up. It's the...
Yeah.
And so when I now talk about this other part, it's pulling the curtain back. And I always say, are you ready? Buckle up. Because it's I'm not able to always enter into a space in a time frame that someone may want. But I am.
DC politicians want to enact harmful credit card mandates that could take away your cash back and rewards points, perks that stretch your budget and make life a little easier. Losing these benefits means less money for your family's everyday essentials like gas and groceries. The perks you rely on could disappear, leaving you with higher costs and fewer options. Tell Congress to guard your card and oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card mandates.
Paid for by Electronic Payments Coalition.
Grateful that I've had relationships where they've been kind and understanding.
Do you love yourself?
Oh my God. I am so in love with myself. I couldn't always say that. I believe that we are all the authors of the best love story ever, our own. And I'm actually finishing up a book called The Discipline of Love. And it's not about being punitive, because the word discipline is there. It's about the art of offering that same level of grace and care and adoration to yourself that I feel as human beings we can innately give to others. But it seems a little bit more difficult to give that same level back to ourselves. So it is a discipline, it's an art, it's an equation. And yeah, so I'm in love with me, excuse me, but it took a while. It took a while to receive, first to identify who am I? Who are you? Because I hid from myself. And the first thing was to identify, I'm not my trauma. I am my victory. I am my power. I am my purpose. But it took a while to even stand in that. But yes, now you can't tell me a thing. I enjoy myself. I purposely started to date myself, meaning going out, just sitting alone, which was very hard for me to do. Because now I was faced with the juxtaposition of, at one point, I didn't want to be around anyone. But now I'm forcing myself to be alone. And now because I'm forcing myself to be alone, I'm now faced with those thoughts in my head. I have to listen to my thoughts in silence. And I dared myself, and that's the competitor in me, to do that. And from there, I realized, one, I'm a hoot. I said, girl, you're funny. And I learned to love me outside of the different titles and obligations and tasks. It wasn't about accolades. It was about the essence of my heart space and how I chose to show up in the world. So yes, yeah, we have a love fair going on.
Good. I'm filled with joy to hear that. It's important. And the majority of the audience for this podcast tends to be women, actually, more than men. Mm-hmm. And so if there are women listening, and I'm sure there will be, that are thinking, oh, do I love myself? I've never really thought about that. How would you guide or suggest women, girls, teenagers start to feel more confident in their own skin, in who they are? Where do you start?
That's an excellent question. Where do you start? I'll give where I started. Mm-hmm. And it may not be the path for others, but I'm a writer, meaning I like to, and I'm tactile oriented, so I write everything down. So I wrote down everything that caused myself, my heart space, whoa. And I may not be what everyone else wants to do, but I had to get it out. I wrote that down, and then I tore it all up. So I physically had to see it because I had to have a physical manifestation of getting rid of it. Then I wrote myself my first love letter. And I wrote to my younger self all those things that I desired for her and all those things that she aspired to be and all those things in which we are. And I celebrate, and I still do this to this day. Because I realized that I had allowed others' words to become the imprint into my heart, which imprinted my mind. And I was believing everyone else's narrative, including those who were my abusers, per their trauma, to dictate how I showed up. And I'm like, no, I'm going to create my own truth. And so with that, I started this habitual, this practice of speaking to myself, of writing to myself, And that enabled me to love myself because I was now speaking as well as doing other things, taking, started meditation, doing those things where I could release. Just I had to do continual practices that evolved the essence of feeling love, whatever that looked like for another person. But that's what I needed. I needed to get by water. I needed to do meditation. I needed to do yoga. I needed to move because of endorphins. And I realized that's what helped me to feel better about myself. And when I felt better about myself, I could then speak those words of adoration unto myself. So that's a bit long-winded, but what I would suggest is to identify those things that bring you joy. And one may say, well, I don't know. So I would say with that, what doesn't bring you joy? And let that go first. Release it. And then now start to fill in those things that you have aspired to do or aspired to be. For me, I wanted to play basketball. I wanted to be in the WNBA. And so that's when my natural competitiveness came in. So that's when my movement came in. And so I needed to move. And when I was moving and I'm doing those things that I'm enjoying, now I'm replacing those woeful spaces. I'm now feeling elevated in my spirit. My heart is feeling happy. And I also identify because I enjoy words. Now, as you're feeling elevated, call you speak to yourself. Impart those words of power and purpose and divinity into yourselves. And that formula has now got me here. It enabled me to be on a stage and say, hi, my name is Kolya. And I was once here, but I now stand in front of you with a zest for life, with an admiration for every human being. So that would be my formula. Letting releasing what doesn't serve you, what doesn't serve your heart and your mind. And now saturating and birthing what does and moving in that same energy.
It's so interesting to say that, because I listened to an interview this morning with Matthew McConaughey,
yeah.
You know, the actor, the all right,
yes.
the actor. And he said when he was younger, one of the things he did when he was, before he was famous, before he knew what he wanted to do, when he felt quite lost, he said when he was younger, and he used to write long letters to himself. Yeah. And he said he got to a stage where he said the last one I can remember was like a 16-page letter to myself. I was writing it from myself to myself, just putting down on paper everything that that I found. He's just written a book, and it's called Poems and Prayers. Mm-hmm. And it's going back to when he was 18 and talking about this. And just literally, I listened to that this morning, and you're saying the same thing about it. Write to yourself, write it down. I think that's such a powerful thing that we don't do. And I think especially, and I want us to come on to this, but especially in the times we live in today, I mean, certainly when I was growing up, there was no such thing as, there were no smartphones, there was certainly no social media, there was none of that sort of stuff that teenagers and children have to cope with today. And I just wonder what your... Or almost how do we, it's a big question, sorry, but how do we almost overcome the challenge of social media? Because social media, if you go into, I'm not sure what it is, TikTok or Instagram or whatever, there's this view of how we should look, how 13, 14-year-old girls should look, and the makeup they should wear, and the how their body should look, all of those sort of things. And that's just very visual, whereas your story in pageantry is very much about who you are as a person and your experiences, and a much, much more of a holistic thing.
Mm-hmm.
And I just wondered how damaging it is when people are just constantly scrolling and seeing these supposed images of perfect life, all these filters that we have on our lives that we're supposed to live. I'm not sure what the question is, but do you understand what I mean? This challenge that we have from this amazing but terrible device that we all have in our hands.
I think I do understand the lens of your question. And my challenge is I don't have the answer. Meaning, I wish I did, right? Because because I've been asked something similar before. And I wish I did. What I come back to is that, and this is my experience, my first home, my first school was my home. And I'm mindful that all parents or human beings may not be equipped with the same capacity to be able to navigate other human beings on a certain path, because just how life may show up. But I dare others to take a step back from social media and to look what's in front of us, meaning the children, the other adults, and to show up outside of that device. I'm not going to say that, listen, I definitely have my social media accounts and I use them. But there's a joy when it comes to, for me, interacting with someone in real time, outside of text. It also enables us to get a real time. And again, it could be someone full glammed up or whichever way, not that that won't be present in social media. But there's something to be said about real life experiences versus a still, versus a filter. One thing that I do, not to make it necessarily about me, a lot of times when I speak, I'll come all glammed up. I'll have my crown, my sash on, and I'll start speaking. I'll start taking it all off. Take off my makeup. I take off my earrings because I don't want the message to be lost on the aesthetic. I'll present, yes, I've done Essence. Yes, I've done Vogue. I've done Runway, New York Runway. Not New York, I'm sorry. I'm actually about to be New York Fashion Week, but different fashion weeks. I'll say all that because as human beings, sometimes we are attracted to some of the accolades, and I understand that. But then I also say, and I try to kill myself because there's a big difference between what I just said, the glam versus this, the trauma. And now I'm taking off of my makeup, all this other stuff, so you can see me. I'm no different than anyone else. The only thing really that separates us, maybe our name, our gender is how we may identify, but we all have successes and challenges. What happens with social media, you see what's being presented and you don't always get that backstory. I was at an event last weekend and different people were coming up to me. I was so honored. And they were saying, well, how's this going? And how's that going? I had to remember, oh, social media. I just wanted to be coach. I just wanted to eat some popcorn. Yeah. And I was like, oh, I'm thinking, oh my gosh. And I said to one of my roommates from undergrad, remind me, do I know? And they was like, no. Chloe, remember social media? I was like, okay, yeah. And so I'm like, yes, people, social media gets this false interpretation. It's not always bad, but that you have this relationship with this person. But it also can get this false narrative as how things should be and one should show up. There's a beauty in our authentic selves. And I believe when we can get back to, in whichever way that may look like for someone, to say, hey, yes, I may show up this way, but let me show you who I am. And then I believe in many instances that same narrative will shift for younger generations. I think about young ladies I've worked with and say, hey, you don't have to come dolled up. And if you do, it's nothing necessarily wrong, but you don't have to. Yeah. This is just come comfortable as you are. I'm going to be in heels all day, Andrew. I'm only 5'8". That may not be short to some, but in my family go up to 6'6", so I'm the runt. So I'm in heels all day. But I say, be comfortable in who you are. So now let's get back to the essence of what that is. And that's the piece I believe social media negates. It's the essence in some instances of who the person is. It's so it's so detailed, though. It's so many layers to that. Yeah,
there are, and I've got an 18-year-old daughter who's amazing. She's off at college at the moment. She just started this year studying. She's left home. Got a 15-year-old son that's at home now. And I do often think it's so complicated to be a young person nowadays. Mm-hmm. A silly example. So when I was, I don't know, 15, 14, 15, whatever, pornography might have been a torn out page from Playboy that was passed from the playground that somebody the older brother had. And I was like, my God, it was like, oh my God, that lady's got no clothes on. Oh my God. It was the most shocking thing in the world ever. Yeah. Now, I think the average age that boys see everything you can ever imagine and things I can't even imagine. This is sort of 11, 12, 13. How on earth are they ready to cope with that? And then is that their expectation of what their girlfriend should do, should look like, should be, etc.? And I think that's when a wonderful mom or dad or aunt or uncle or friend, older friend, whatever, is so important. Because I think a lot of schools don't teach sex education in any meaningful way. There's lots of restrictions. I know in the US now, in the UK now, lots of restrictions for political reasons. Yeah. And we end up with expecting our very young, early teens to understand it. So that's when it becomes so important that we do have, and it might sound like a very old-fashioned word, but like role models in our life. And I think that's what you have with your mom, with your family. But I think for people without that, it must be so, so hard. That's why the work that you do is so important. But the question I'm coming to is, how do you make sure you don't just give too much? You just exhaust yourself, because I can sense so clearly that you want to be there for people, you want to help people, you want to empower and give spirit and give energy to people. How do you make sure that you keep? Yeah, you keep yourself. I know you have therapy, but how do you make sure you keep something for yourself?
I'm learning. I haven't learned that yet. I haven't learned it. I was just actually speaking with a friend, and I said, "Oh gosh, I think I'm experiencing burnout, and I'm just so fatigued." And yeah, so I haven't learned the formula, but what I'm striving to do is to be more attentive to my body, to listen to my body. And that, so I'm speaking from a physical, emotional piece where, again, I was speaking about how a lot of times in our human nature, we want to give. But I speak a lot about, when I do mindfulness meditations with others, about the power of pause. I like to say hashtag pause, which is maybe a bit dated. But I said, hey, you know, I need to remember that too. And so to listen to my body when it says, hey, you need to just take a moment to reset and to restore. The other piece of that, from a spiritual perspective, where I feel that we all, no matter how you may believe or not believe, that there's part of ourselves that we're also giving our energy, if you will, unto others. That, so I talked about resting, but it's also a piece where I believe you have to be energized. And that is different to me than just taking a nap. It's where I have to sit in silence, and whether I'm sitting outside amongst the trees with nature or by water, or I'm doing some type of meditation or something that's going to fuel the very essence of me that is different from just resting. And so I have to do a check-in with myself, and now I'm doing it more often. I can easily just go.
Yeah.
And that just comes from just fight or flight from when I was younger, and a desire to be of service. But I realize, Andrew, there's nothing I can do for anyone if I'm fully depleted. So it's really assessing, how do you feel today, Cully? Are you tired? Are you hungry? What do you need in order to be of service for yourself, in order to be of service for others? And so I'm learning. I believe you are a human being that's of service, hence this wonderful space that you've made. And you talked about your beautiful legacies, your children. And so I'm going to lean into you spoil them rotten. You love them a lot. As my daddy says, I'm loved hard. And I say spoil rotten, I mean in a wonderful way. But I believe that first level of love that we must do as human beings and caregivers is to remember, in order to be of service of the ones that we love, we have to pause and just to take a moment, which can be hard, I believe, when, at least for me, sometimes it's hard to say, oh, well, no, this needs to be done. But to take a moment to pause in order to be able to be of service, to love without pause those who we do love. So it's a lesson I'm learning. I'm having this human experience where I'm learning I too need to just take a break. I'm actually going to take a little nap today, which is a big deal. I'm going to try to. But yeah, I think it's something that we all must put into our toolbox.
Definitely. Yeah. It's a little bit like if you go on the if you go on an airplane and they say if oxygen falls and your mask falls down, put your own mask on first before helping somebody else.
Yeah.
It's the same thing. If we're not well rested and well fed and well watered, whatever, how can we look after somebody else? You mentioned there a little bit about spirituality, and I wondered how important spirituality beliefs are to you in your life.
Very much so. I don't. The way I was raised is God is God. And I've had the beautiful experience to be at various places of worship, to see God in various aspects. My parents also took us, this is why I have an affinity for water, to water. And to experience God in that way, and to see the most poetic thing where the water comes just to a certain space, to the shore, and then goes back. That's the most beautiful thing to me. My mother is the author of my love for clouds, where she would have me look at these cumulus and stratus clouds just to see their various creations. And so I've had the privilege to experience spirituality in various ways. And one of the most beautiful gifts my mother gave to me when I was younger, she gave me this card. And she said, never forget to send your timbers up to heaven, wherever that zip code is. That was the most beautiful thing. And so my parents gave us permission to, with, I know others may have different experience and may not agree, but this is what aligns and works for me, to find God in whichever way that aligned with us. And so I'm spiritual. I'm very much comfortable going to various places of worship. So I don't have to be in one or the other. I can sit right here and experience the spirituality of God and the ancestors and earth right in the comfort of my bed. But I do take, I do take great, joy when I come amongst other human beings too. But it's a significant part of my life. I know, you may hear my dog. I know that there is a God for several reasons, including that beautiful woman in which I came through. I mean, she is truly an angel now in the universe, but was always one on earth for me. So yeah, So it's part of my makeup, spirituality.
Mm. I love the fact that you can find spirituality in different places. And just thinking about the two things, so water and the movement of water and clouds. The amazing thing with water and clouds is you're never, ever going to see them in the same place as they are this second.
Yeah.
So the next time you look at the cloud, you're never ever going to see that cloud again.
Yeah.
You're never ever going to see the water like that again. It's just extraordinary to think that that's
It's so poetic.
It's incredible.
It's so poetic. Have you ever laid back on grass and just look up?
Absolutely.
Flowers, yeah. The most beautiful thing ever. The
architecture. Yeah, cloud. Yeah, we used to do it with the children, cloud gazing.
Yes.
Absolutely, yeah, we love it. Absolutely. Just two more questions, if that's okay, then I'll let you go. She's been so generous. One is, are you a planner? Do you know what the future looks like, what the future holds for you?
Yes. So because of my manager, we are preparing to compete again in 2026. Maybe my next one, it'll be probably an international title. We're looking at a few systems now. I'll probably be in a swimsuit competition. I'm very excited. So we're looking at a few and just gearing up. And the prep is usually about 6 months to a year because different systems have different things. So
yeah,
I'm excited about that. My current title is U.S. United Queens Ambassador. That means, based off of my service, per my former title, that the system has contracted me out for another year to be an ambassador to represent the ethos of the system. So I'm very humbled. We'll be debuting in February. It's called Sultry Mindfulness, and it speaks to the essence of, and it sounds very, it may sound sexual, but it's not. It may sound sensual, and it is, but it's not a sexual, it's more so tapping into the essence of who you are and releasing those things that don't serve you and allowing the trueness of who you are to evolve. And that within itself is a very sultry, intentional practice. I'm very excited about that. I'm going to do a soft launch in December and January, and then it'll be a 3-day series that'll be offered in February. And I'm teaming with an organization called the Kitty Box that speaks on and works with women with their feminine health and reproductive health, rather. And so I'm very excited about that. Spoke about Discipline of Love. Hopefully that'll be coming out next month. And so another thing that there's a journal that we're working on, but I feel a little overwhelmed. This is what hashtag awesome. But yeah, it's a couple of things. We were intentional of having certain things to be released at the end of this year, beginning of next year, because then a lot of my focus will go towards preparing for whichever international pageant I'll be competing in. I'll be doing New York Fashion Week this coming February and probably a couple of other modeling opportunities. But the focus is really on the discipline of love and different aspects to awaken one's mind and to stand in your truth. So that'll be seen in Sultry Mindfulness. It'll be seen in the book. It'll be seen in different speaking opportunities. And then finally, we'll be finishing our doctorate. Thank goodness. But yes.
And then my last question, I have no idea how you're going to answer this. So if we're at your 80th birthday party and people are talking about you and saying what you've done and what you've meant to them and what your life's been, what do you think people will be saying?
What do I think? I believe people would say I was kind and compassionate and generous with my heart. I will hope that they will say that too. I'm hoping too. That's how I strive to lead my life. I believe they also would say that she did not, I'm about to cry. She did not give up on herself. She didn't give up. So not only, that is my hope. And as I walk this purpose journey, it's really the echo of my work that I would want people to remember. That I was kind and I was generous with my heart and I didn't give up on myself. and not giving up on myself is because I'm not giving up on anyone else.
Amazing. Thank you so much. I really didn't know what to expect. I think I'm going to speak to somebody that's in the pageant. So what's it going to be like? But wow. I can't wait to listen back. You just done and are doing so much.
Thank you.
For other people by exactly as you said, just not giving up on who you are, who your mom knew you were.
Yeah.
Who you were meant to be. So all I can say is just thank you so much. To keep doing what you're doing.
Thank you.
I'm looking forward to finding out what pageants you're going to go into next. And looking forward to the book. And just keep being you. That's all I can ask for. Thank you. Thank you so much.
You're welcome, Andrew. Thank you for this sacred space and allowing my tears to flow, my dog to bark. I didn't cough my butt. I appreciate you more than you know. It's a difficult conversation to have. However, there's a healing that I hope that others are able to identify that, gosh, it's not about me, but when my head was literally in the toilet, that you can pull it out and you can stand and say, I'm going to be okay. There's another side. There's hope.
There is.
There's hope.
Enjoy your nap.
Thank you. I appreciate you.